Gronk was a Monday. This is First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. Good weekend, gentlemen.
Great weekend. Great weekend. Great suit, Jenna.
Thank you very much.
Looks amazing.
Thank you.
Chris damn near broke 80 on the golf course, living his best life.
I'm back golfing and everything.
Yeah. Things are good.
Absolutely.
Feel strong. Well, we got a jammed show for
Nick's
you today.
Trying
a fun
to get
one,
black,
too.
Got a black eye.
Talk about that some more as we proceed across the next 3 hours.
Old Wonder Bread trying to be wheat bread, you know.
Moving on to the Patriots now. They're coming off Bill Belichick and Tom Brady's 6th Super Bowl win. And while this team seemingly feeds off of the concept of next man up, they may be running out of men this year. New left tackle, no Rob Gronkowski, and Brady entering the season at age 42. Brady says this year presents a unique challenge.
Yeah, it's always challenging when you have significant turnover. And I think it's, I always say it's like climbing a mountain, you know? And every time you climb the mountain, the next year you start right at the bottom, right with everyone else. And you have a new group of people, you have a new group of climbers. You got different tools you can use. And everyone starts at the same place. And you just gotta, there's no way to do it other than just start working your way up. And, you know, that's what we're doing now. It's, you can't get to the top in 2 days. It's gonna take a long, you know, it's a long year, it's a long grind. And everyone's gonna, the guys who make the team, they'll have earned it. They'll put us in our best position to be the best team we could be.
All right, CC, Tom Brady's got a lot of things working, you'd say, against him, the roster, you got age, but of everything out there, what's the biggest challenge you think he's facing this season?
I think to try to keep everything fresh in his mind, that as if he didn't learn it. When you've been to 19 training camps, when you've been with Bill Belichick, you've heard every pregame speech, you've heard all the prep, it's hard to keep that fresh in your mind. You're talking about the turnover because people need to see Tom Brady reacting the way he would have reacted when he was younger because they're not used to being around the Patriots. So I could see the challenge of Tom saying, hey, it's like climbing up this mountain, but it's the same mountain. And when you get to certain junctures, it's boring. How do I make that exciting? How can I make it exciting for the guys around me that they aren't looking at me saying, ah, you know something, Tom's not like he used to be. So it's always a challenge to play football at a high level. And as you get older, like, what's going to motivate him? He's already the greatest quarterback that's ever played. He's one of the greatest football players that's ever played. So trying to find motivation every single day, it's difficult. You have to lie to yourself. You have to try to create concepts. You have to listen to people like us, more so Nick, because Tom knows I'm a TB12 guy. And you have to get these little clips that motivates you on a daily basis to make sure that you stay fresh, to make sure that you don't get bored. You saw him and Belichick going at it a little bit this weekend, a little simple drill. But those are the types of things that keep you right on the edge, keep you right on your game, and keep you because if I've been to this juncture of the mountain 20 straight times, how can I have the same enthusiasm for someone who's never been up here? But how do I trick him into believing? Man, I'm watching all this film. I'm reading all these coverages. I'm reading all these fronts. And that is hard to impossible to do. As you get older, it's not the games. It's the meetings and the practices you get tired of. You get tired of hearing the same stuff. Oh, they're in a 4-3 cover too. Well, what else are they going to be in that front? So somehow you have to play a trick on your mind to keep everything fresh, so that every day that you can be on this long adventure with your teammates, and some days, oh, you're not halfway up the mountain, oh, you're not 3/4 way up the mountain, and you're going every step along with them, it's a hard, it is a struggle even for the greatest of them.
I hate to put it right back to you, but I want to follow up on that, and it's something that I can't answer. So how do you think he does it? As a guy that played 16 years, this is Brady's 20th, how do you think he stays motivated? We know what motivates a lot of guys late. They are trying to get that first championship. They are trying to squeeze out every last dollar. Brady's got all the championships, all the money, already has passed Montana and Elway and whomever else was on the list. So how do you think he stays motivated when you're saying that's the biggest struggle?
I think there's a couple things. I think Tom wants to play until he's 45. I think that Tom wants to be beyond it's Bill Belichick getting all the credit. I think Tom, there's people with 6 rings, all right? Tom wants to have more rings than anybody. Forget quarterbacks. Forget about all that. Tom wants to have 7, 8, championship rings. I believe those types of things. And I believe because early in his career, he wasn't an accomplished passer. Now, later in his career, he really gets a thrill out of, you know something? I got more velocity on the ball now than I did 15 years ago. So those things right there, I think, keep Tom Brady focused on what he's trying to accomplish.
Earlier this week, Nick, you and I had a conversation in the morning meeting, and you said, oh, that's right, I forgot. Because I brought up the football almanac. And you said, I have to read that again. And I thought to myself, I don't know besides maybe you, Chris, anyone that knows more about football than you, Nick, but you wanted to do it. You actually enjoy doing that. You like getting better, even though for the most part you know the information, but the numbers
change. Yeah, but I got a lot still to prove.
Okay, but I think there's a part of him that enjoys it. I think that the part of him that actually really loves doing this, doesn't want to do anything else, and all of that is sort of built into what he does every day. It's less of a grind, and it's more of, well, I feed off of this because I know that's what makes me better.
Well, I believe, and I totally, I mean, wholeheartedly believe, that there is nothing Tom Brady loves more in the world than those 16 to 20 Sundays, Mondays, Thursdays, those 16 to 20 games a year. And we hear that from older athletes all the time. I'd play for free, you got to pay me to practice. What Chris is talking about is this part of the year that nobody enjoys, particularly a guy like Brady that is probably, of everyone on the team, getting the least out of it. He might be getting the same out of the actual reps in practice, but the least out of the meetings, the least out of the instruction, because he has been there almost as long as Belichick, and he's been there through multiple systems, through all these different teammates. And so the reason I wanted to focus on it is because that, as much as anything, is part of his legacy of unquestioned greatness, is that he finds a new motivation, that he finds a new mountain to climb, even if it is the same damn mountain, because he's had nothing left to prove for 5 years. And he just keeps finding a new reason to show up as motivated to decide during that drill, see, I'm annoyed that the defense isn't respecting the play action because they know it's a pass. I'm going to call a run just because I can. Like, I find that fascinating.
Let me tell you something. Tom Brady hates training camp. I went to 14, went to play 16 years, went to 14 training camp. Training camp sucks. It sucks. It hurts. It's something that you understand I must do on the way to this. So Tom Brady's playing a trick on his mind like any person that does something for a long time. He makes it more important every single day. But when Tom Brady's running out there to the field, there's a certain amount of kid-like joy, but there's just a certain amount of professionalism that takes over. I must do this. This is a huge part of being a great player, and he's mastered that. The greatest master the ugly parts of their profession, and it becomes just something else that they must do. But there's no way Tom Brady enjoys training camp. That's just a flat-out lie. It's impossible.
I think, to your point, I think Michael Strahan once said, if it wasn't for training camp, if we could just skip it, I probably would have played an extra couple seasons. I'm sure a lot of guys playing a long time would say the same thing. All right, let's take a break. Coming up, could Ezekiel Elliott's holdout drag into the regular season? That's next on First Things First.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
We've got a great heavyweight battle for you. coming up on Saturday as Brooklyn's unbeaten Adam Kovnatsky takes on Chris Areola Saturday, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on Fox.
I know you can't wait for that fight, Jenna.
Sports F. I don't know what you mean. We are now going viral here on First Things First.
This is great.
Cleveland Indians pitcher Trevor Bauer, one of the most sought-after pitchers in the MLB trade market right now. However, yesterday he got lit up and was pulled after allowing 8 runs in 4 innings. And when Terry Francona came to the mound to pull him, Bauer showed just a little bit of emotion.
Watch this. He turns and fires it. Thankfully, he threw it against the board, so there was nobody in the seats there to get hit with it. But you don't do that when your manager's coming out. It's disrespectful. So Francona's going, what the heck was that? And Bauer goes, my bad, Skip, I'm sorry. And he goes, go grab some pine. I'm going to see you in a little bit. And so he's in the principal's office right now, and then let them deal with it. But the Royals, they frustrated him. They got some big hits on some of his best pitches, and so he's got to go.
Bauer's a crazy guy. I mean, prior to this, we knew Bauer was a little bit of a crazy guy. Yankees may be considering trading for him, especially now since Stroman went to the Mets, oddly enough. But this is, I know it's not the takeaway, that's a hell of a throw, man. That thing went about 380 feet in the air that he threw it, clearing the center field wall.
Oh, yeah. I was glad that Terry Francona checked him, because I know Terry from our days over at another network and everything. That's the kind of person he is. Because he said, what the F? What was that? Now, go sit over there on the bench. See, I like that aspect, because very few times, especially at that level, are you going to see the manager respond like that way.
And I've never seen a pitcher do that in response. Oh, you're going to take the ball out of my hands? Well, go get it. He was mad, man. It also wasn't his fault. Like, he had a center fielder drop a fly ball. He had an error on the thing. He was some bad luck.
I like that he had some pie right in the middle of the game. It's time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. Some terrible news for the Cincinnati Bengals. A.J. Green was carted off the field in training camp. He's out 6 to 8 weeks with a torn ligament in his ankle, making him unlikely to be on the field for week 1 for Cincinnati. See your reaction to the news?
This is bad news. This is one of the classiest wide receivers we've seen in the NFL in the last 20 years. A.J. Green, it happens fast. Last year got injured. Now he gets injured to start the season. Is A.J. Green, after starting out a career, like one of only a handful of wide receivers where he was dominant those first 7 years? Unfortunate for the Bengals and their new head coach. They don't have one of the most consistent wide receivers, one of the best deep threats that we have in the NFL
and
available.
Devastating for Andy Dalton's chances to start the year well in what I think is a very difficult division. You have the Browns, who should be really good, the Ravens, who won it last year, only got better with the addition of Earl Thomas and Lamar being a year older, and the Steelers, we know that they'll be at least 500, or they
facing
are every
those
year.
Three defenses twice without eight.
Oh. Man, and so, I mean, A.J. Green has kept that offense afloat despite what I would consider mediocre quarterbacking. This is a devastating loss for them early on.
Some bad news for the New York Giants. Golden Tate suspended for 4 games after testing positive for using a fertility drug. They've also already lost Corey Coleman for the season to a torn ACL. Sterling Shepard has a fractured finger, and there is no more Odell Beckham Jr. Boy, if only the Giants did have another top receiver to rely on. Nick, what do you make of what's going on with the Giants?
I mean, this is bad luck, bad fortune, bad decisions, all hitting the same position on the team and the position that's going to be spotlighted because they traded away the best receiver, the most talented receiver in the history of their franchise. Evidently Golden Tate knew this was coming, didn't. He told the Giants about it, but not until after he had signed the 4-year deal with them. So there are little question marks there. But it's tough, man. They got no one to throw to except for our friend Evan Engram for the first month of the season.
I think there's been other people in the league that have struggled with the same situation. But you are responsible, Jenna, for everything that goes into your body. 100%. They got doctors that will test it. And you got years of examples of what to do and what not to do. I understand trying to grow a family. It's one of God's commandments. But I'm just going to tell God, you have to wait till I get out the league. All right? I can't have no babies right now. That's a lot of money.
I agree
That's
with the first
That's a lot of money for bad kids. It's a lot of money to bring a bad
kid. Just going to cost you more money.
Good news for Bobby Wagner. He signed a 3-year, $54 million extension with the Seahawks this weekend. worth over $40 million guaranteed. This makes him the highest paid inside linebacker in football. See, put into perspective just how good Wagner is.
He is the quarterback. He's Russell Wilson of their defense. He's been underrated for a long time. He's been the best defender on that team for a long time. People talk about Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor. Yep. They always talk about the secondary. Bobby Wagner never got enough credit. You are not running the ball against Seattle. You are not throwing the short passing game. Why? Because of Bobby Wagner. He deserved this money, the $40 million guarantee, because we've seen Earl leave without getting paid. Sherm leave without getting paid. Bobby stayed and got paid. Good for him.
And as they do in Seattle, very smartly done by John Schneider, the GM, in that he becomes the highest paid ever at his spot, but it's a short-term deal. Mm-hmm. He will be worth this money certainly over the next 2 years, which is really all you're committed to him on. And then if he continues to this level, he'll be up for another deal, so it works for both parties. I think more teams should emulate that. Pay the guy what he wants, but do it on a short-term
there
basis.
There you go, Nick. Tell the teams what to do.
With a high percentage
guarantee. I'll tell the players what to do. You tell the teams
exactly
how to run
their business. Exactly right. There we go. There we go. That'll work for this football
season.
Speaking
of two parties who both need a little advice here, finishing up with Ezekiel Elliott. He didn't show up to camp on Friday and continued to hold out throughout the weekend. According to reports, he has yet to counter the Cowboys' extension offer. Could be a long battle between the two sides. CC, is Zeke handling this the right way?
Well, he only had two choices, and that's either to hold out at the beginning or tell them, I need a new deal, show up to camp, but I'm not going to be here during the regular season. His ability to not be there, it puts instant pressure, regardless of what Jerry, Steven, anybody else says, because there's going to be some money passed out in Dallas this summer, and there's going to be a lot of it. And if I'm Zeke, like I said, you are in business for yourself. On your check, it does not say, Amari Cooper's my teammate. Oh, you know, I got good offensive linemen. It says the Dallas Cowboys pay to the order of Ezekiel Elliott. That's the way the checks come. They don't come to, you got to split them up. No. Man, they got a little sliver of pie, and I'm making sure that I get a piece of that. Because I'm getting ready to touch the ball 450 times. This team revolves around me more so than any person. He is more important than the head coach. He's more important than the quarterback. And he's the best player on the team. And I know guys in the locker room, what do they ultimately respect? When you work hard and you perform, and you get paid for it. I think that locker room will respect Zeke getting paid because he has carried that team for 3 years.
Well, and I went back and read the comments from Stephen Jones this past May. And Stephen Jones said two things, both of which are probably getting him in a little bit of trouble now. We've talked about the one that he said, which is we know we have to pay Zeke, but we've got a couple years to get that done. I'm sure Zeke heard that and was like, no. You got a few months to get that done. But the other thing he said in that same interview that I had forgotten until I read it this morning is, well, obviously the contract will start at Gurley and go from there. Well, Todd Gurley got 4 years, $58 million with $45 million guaranteed. He said to the whole world, it will start there and go from there. So I don't know, because it was reported this weekend the Cowboys made an offer to Ezekiel Elliott, and as of we sit here today, it has not yet been responded to. That logic tells me that means it was an offer they looked at and said, man, this isn't even worth responding to. Pass this back. So are they not starting at Todd Gurley and going from there? Are they presenting him as I think would be reasonable for an initial offer? Less than highest paid history of the league at your spot, which maybe would be a credible offer if you'd have just kept your mouth shut.
Right.
But they talked about paying Dak. They talked about paying Amari. They talked about paying Zeke as the highest paid ever, just that he's going to have to wait. And so is he handling this the right way? If he has the stomach for it, if he is truly willing to go to the wall on this, meaning not just miss August, but go into September, that opening game against the Giants and potentially not be there, if he's got the stomach for it, then yeah. Because then I think the leverage will shift to him because the Cowboys desperately need him. But where he wouldn't be handling this right is if it's only a half measure. Is if he's going to sit out, and then show up still without getting paid and having lost his leverage. But it does not seem like that is, at least as we sit here today, his plan of action.
You think it's on the board that Ezekiel Elliott would be willing to miss games over the contract? Do you think it can get that far, or do you think these two, or will the Cowboys not let it get that far?
Well, I think there's some technicalities as far as the CBA, what he can do, what he can't do, what's best. Mike, because there are some restrictions. If you are better off not coming than trying to come and then leave. We saw Julio Jones last year. He ended up showing up. Arthur Blank made him a promise. Julio still hadn't got paid yet, and we're another year removed. But Arthur Blank said that he's going to pay him. Is Zeke willing to go on a handshake agreement with Jerry Jones? I don't think so. Playing running back, I wouldn't do it. So I do believe that Zeke would not show up and be playing around, messing around. I believe he's serious because he's thought about this. This is not something he just woke up and said, I'm not going to show up the Dallas Cowboys. He knows how important he is, and he knows the message he sends right now is very important. I think Zeke will be there week number one. I believe they'll come to some type of compromise.
And he also knows that Dallas did not plan for this, meaning here's the running backs on the roster. Darius Jackson's the only one who has any NFL touches. He has 6 carries in his career. And then it's 2 rookies, a 4th-round pick, Tony Pollard, and a 7th-round pick, Mike Weber Jr. They don't have, not that there's any great replacement for Ezekiel Elliott, but they don't have C.J. Anderson sitting there behind Todd Gurley.
Or James Conner, like what we saw last year in Pittsburgh, where you had Roethlisberger say, okay, well, we'll do with what we have. They really don't have the same situation.
There's certainly no one that is even close to proven, and Zeke knows, and his representation knows, how critical he is and how critical this season is for the Cowboys as far as having this young core together.
All right, let's move on to the L.A. Rams now. Coming off a trip to the Super Bowl, but also coming off a trip home from the Super Bowl, empty-handed. Rams looking, hoping to avoid the always dreaded Super Bowl hangover. A big factor there, the health of running back Todd Gurley. A season after getting a massive contract extension, there are still questions about what he can do and how well he can do it with his arthritic knee. Gurley says he's done talking about the knee.
Y'all gotta stop putting this bad energy in my knee, man. Just let it be.
But are you eager to just kind of show everyone, that you're fine and you're the same guy that you've been?
No, I'm not eager to do anything. I don't have to prove anything to nobody. I've been doing this for years now, so it's the same stuff every year.
All right, Nick, does Gurley have to be in top form for the Rams to have any success this year?
Well, to have any success, maybe not. But to have a great year, to have anything close to what they were last year, which was 13-3 and in the Super Bowl, absolutely. He's the best player on their offense. He is the part of their offense that defenses have to account for each and every snap. That, to me, opens everything up for their quarterback. The Rams have told us, hey, man, Todd Gurley at full strength was worthy getting paid with 2 years left on his deal. They got their quarterback who's got 2 years left on his deal. They haven't paid him, and they're not going to pay him this year. They've made that clear. They're going to wait until they see another year from him. So to me, the Rams have told everyone who they thought was the most important player. And, I mean, the proof, they lost only 4 times last year. The 4 games they lost, Todd Gurley had 68, 28, 48, and 35 yards rushing. What do all those have in common? Well below what his average over the last few years has been. So, to me, we just talked about the Cowboys. We're talking about the Rams. These might be the only 2 teams in the league where their most important player on their offense is the running back. But I do believe that is the case with the Rams.
And it really hurts them because how the offense is designed. It's not a normal offense. They run a certain scheme. Now, they're running plays. They look like other teams. But there is no team that matches their running game with their passing game like the Rams. It's one of the, what I would call genius things that the young genius has done, is he makes almost all the plays look alike. Last year, as far as play action dropbacks, Jared Goff led the NFL with 220 play action. So that's every time he's putting the ball into Todd Gurley or a running back, that simulated action, what it does to the defense. And how significant is it? When he drops straight back, his passing rating drops 20 points. So now you're talking about, it makes my quarterback better. This is the way the offense is run, and this is the way that the defenses, they don't know what we're doing. It's one of one. You got 32 offense in the league. No one runs their offense like the Rams run their offense, and that is predicating on slamming the ball up in there with a running back. His skill to be able to run in the open field, his blazing speed that he has, catching the ball out of the backfield, his dual threat. He's one of the best dual threats we've had since Marshall Faulk. And when he's not 100%, when you don't have those things, the offense doesn't look the same. Their three-receiver offense is not run the same. We saw that last year when Cooper Kupp got hurt. They couldn't do the play action. Those things hampered that offense and hampered the growth of their quarterback.
Just quickly to both of you, it's not like he's coming off a specific injury that's going to heal. This is an arthritic knee, which is a degenerative issue that he's going to have with that. How do you manage his playing time when he's a workforce? You want a workhorse. He is in there, and you want him to get the brunt of that work. How do you manage that, and how does that affect golf?
And he's not the only player playing with the arthritic knee. The coaches have to be able to manage it, get him through training camp as healthy as possible, try to get him through the regular season as healthy as possible. But you won't see Todd Gurley have games like Ezekiel Elliott, L. Bell, where he has 26 carries, 30 carries in a game where they try to grind it out. The maintenance program from Todd Gurley, it's real. For that contract, for them to be able to get their money, they got to be able to keep him healthy. I don't think it's possible. I'm not trying to put no bad juju into his knee. His knee's been bad for a number of years. He said that. But ultimately, the arthritic knee, it becomes bone on bone. It becomes how much pain can he tolerate. And last year, he couldn't tolerate the pain, and it affected his performance.
And the Rams were very unique last season also in this regard. They were in 11 personnel, meaning one running back, one tight end, three wide receiver, an extraordinary percentage of the time. I think it was over 94% of the time. So they had the same people on the field almost every play. It looked fancy because of pre-snap motion and because of what Chris is talking about is if you were to be watching from the All-22 on film a second into a play, not they all, but so many of them look the exact same, and then it throws the defense off because and then is Gurley getting it? Is he not? Is it play action? Is it a quick slant? Whatever it is. So much of that becomes easier to defend if the running back there is just a guy as opposed to a star. And unlike the Cowboys, by the way, the Rams are telling us they're worried about this. They drafted Malcolm Brown. They brought back Malcolm Brown. They drafted Darrell Henderson, who averaged almost 10 yards per touch last year in college. Like, they know they might not be able to rely on Todd Gurley this year the way they have the last couple years.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, the same question we've been asking for the last 5 years. Will age finally catch up to one Tom Brady? That's ahead on First Things First. We got a big show for you today. At 7:30 this morning, Tobias Harris will join us to talk about the Sixers' title chances. At 7:45, Kyle Rudolph will join us live from Vikings camp a little bit later. But the best reason to tune in is this guy right here, our favorite big-time guest, former head
what
coach.
What up, Coach?
Eric Mangini. How's
good
it going?
Good to be back. Good to be back.
Great to have you. We missed you off-season.
They've told like eight people. Nick's told four. Jenna's got three
this
other ones.
Just
and you.
Him.
Oh, man, you're our favorite. They've been going through this
that
basketball
is,
season.
That's actually not
they were
true.
Loving up on Antoine. Nope. Man, you are the best. Love you. Broussard, nope. Love you. Like.
Every time I turn on the show, a little part of me dies because someone's like, okay. Oh, you're my favorite.
Well, resurrect yourself, my friend, because you're here right now and we love you.
I am the favorite right now.
You are the favorite. Let's talk some Andrew Luck, favorite one, and the Indianapolis Colts. It was a nice bounce back year for Luck last season, that after a very few frustrating years dealing with injury, returned to lead the Colts back to the playoffs last season. However, Colts might have higher aspirations than just the measly playoffs. Colts owner Jim Irsay did not hold back selling his fans on what this team can do.
This team is one of the best teams that I've had the privilege to bring to our fans with the general manager and head coach and have a situation that honestly matches some of those days of Peyton, Edger, and Reggie, all those guys. I couldn't be more excited, Bob. I think it's really exciting. Obviously, Andrew's in that sweet spot era for him, age-wise, and there's really not a lot of weakness, here with the roster.
Coach, best team since Peyton and Edgerrin and Reggie. Is this finally the Colts' year? Could it be?
They have as good a chance this year as I think anybody does, and I don't love the fact that the owner is creating these expectations. That's something that he could have done to help continue this path is lessen the expectations because they're in a good spot. They're being talked about, and justifiably so. When you look at what they did defensively, made huge strides, and then they drafted seven guys on defense. Mm-hmm. And I think those guys are going to contribute significantly. Andrew Luck, he is a force multiplier. Andrew Luck is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You've seen the progress that he's made coming off the injury. I like where they're positioned offensively. There's three number one draft picks on the offensive line. To me, they are in a great spot to make a huge jump this season. And with the salary cap room that they have and the way that they've positioned the team and built this team, they could be successful long into the future because they've taken a long-term view of building the roster.
Coach, you said a nugget there. I just don't want to pass over it. For those who watch us and everything, we become very comfortable with Coach Mangini. One of your favorite things is force multiplier. Explain that to us, what it means, especially for an NFL quarterback, and if you're going to be considered one of the best in the business, what you're expecting that guy to do.
Well, you can be a force multiplier a couple different ways. You can be a force multiplier where you make five guys around you better. You make the people around you better. You can be a force multiplier and that you make the people around you worse. It can go either way. But really, when you look at that quarterback position, when you insert that player, everybody around him becomes better. The receivers, Tom Brady is the classic example. Peyton Manning is another classic example of guys where it doesn't matter who plays receiver, they become better because of the way that he operates. The running back becomes better because they've got to deal with the quarterback. The offensive line becomes better because that player is in the position he's supposed to be in. He gets him to the right protection, things like that. You are someone who makes everybody around you a better player.
And I want to remind the audience about what the Colts did last year, how they got to the playoffs and ended up winning a playoff game. They were dead in the water. They were 1-5. The coach the week before they fell to 1-5 in what a lot of people thought was a desperate move, if you remember, instead of taking the tie, which he could have against Houston, he went for it on a fourth down in his own territory because he knew they were in a spot where, man, we have to start winning games. They lost that one, then lost the following week as well. And then they won 9 of 10 to finish the year and a playoff game. So they won 10 out of their next 11 games. All of a sudden, they had a dominant defense in that stretch, aided a bit by the quarterbacks they went up against, but still a dominant defense. They were one of only three teams all year to not allow a 100-yard rusher. And most importantly, I think, is what you mentioned, that offensive line. They traded back from the 3rd pick to the 6th pick of that year's draft, still got their guy, Quentin Nelson. He was an instant Pro Bowl, if not all pro caliber player. And Andrew Luck, after the first 5 games of the season, was one of the least sacked quarterbacks in all of football. Final 11 games of the year, he was sacked a total of 8 times. And that was one of your concerns, is Luck getting rid of the ball, not running into sacks himself, but also that offensive line being able to protect him. And all of a sudden, they were a dream scenario football team, which is you've got a good running game, you've got a great offensive line, an excellent defense. Those are the things you have to have to compete if you don't have a great quarterback. But they had all those things with a great quarterback. That's how you can win 10 of 11 games going into that playoff game against the Chiefs. I think the Colts should, the stock is only rising. And your point on the salary cap is another great one. A lot of people thought they have all this cap room. They'll go get Le'Veon Bell. They'll go make a flashy signing. They'll trade for Antonio or Odell. They made a few judicious signings. They bring in Justin Houston, a few other guys. But they didn't overspend. That cap room will roll over into next year, and they will be able to re-sign some of their own guys, and then maybe next year add one major impact player. But no, the Colts, under their new leadership, new head coach, like they have been, they are in as good of a direction as, to me, any team in the NFL. I think you're totally right to be that high on them.
And when you can add 7 draft picks on defense, and that's another testament is the fact that they had so many draft picks going into this into this year's draft, and to be positioned to sign your own players. So as these young stars get in a place where they need their second contract, you don't have to necessarily move on from them, or you don't have to leverage everything and not be able to add any other pieces. They're positioned to compete this year and then should be multiple years in the future.
So now that the Colts are back in the conversation, where do they stack up against other teams in the AFC? Just to give people an idea of how high you are on them.
Well, this is the thing. I think the Colts' defense is going to be underrated. It's going to be unsung. It's going to be led by a guy, Darius Leonard, rookie of the year last year. Man, If you want to see a guy that's hungry, he talks about he wants to be MVP, win a Super Bowl. I like it.
All right, let's finish up with Ezekiel Elliott. He did not show up to camp on Friday, continued to hold out throughout the weekend. According to reports, he has yet to counter the Cowboys' extension offer. Could be a long battle between the two sides. Coach Mangini, is Zeke handling this the right way? Is there a right way?
Yeah, there really isn't a great way to handle a holdout. But I actually understand where he's coming from. They're talking about...
Whoa, cool.
I know.
Hey.
Well, here, from a business perspective, you've got Dak and Amari, who are about to get paid. So he could be very easily coming back next season. And they're saying, well, look, we spent all that money on Dak and we spent all that money on Amari. We don't really have as much money for you. So by inserting himself into these two contracts, now they've got to take that pot of money and divvy it up equally or divvy up however they see those three players. And I think that's a smart play by him. And to do it at this point with all the praise that's been heaped on him, with the straw that stirs the drink. When you start praising a player like that, then you better pay him that's a platinum straw, or I don't even know what metal that would be.
First of all, I really want to give you a hug right now. I'm so glad this is
boundaries.
But I am, and while I agree with you nearly entirely, and I think the Cowboys put themselves, they backed themselves into this corner. Stephen Jones talked about, and Jerry talked about paying Dak. They all talked about paying Amari. And then Stephen Jones in May said two very interesting things about paying Zeke. One was, the exact quote is, obviously, it starts at what Todd Gurley got and goes from there. Well, I mean, that's just handing not a blank check, but a four-year $58 million with $45 million guaranteed check to, and saying it starts from there. But the other thing he said was, but we've got a couple years to get this done. I'm sure Zeke heard that and said, wait, a couple years? You're talking about taking care of all these other guys. I've been the best player on your team. And while Chris is adamant, and I totally agree, that it is not Zeke's responsibility to worry about other guys getting paid, I am curious as a coach if you'd be concerned about how this could play in the locker room when Zeke, while we can argue he's been underpaid, he's paid like a top five pick. Dak, who's been the quarterback, who's never missed a game, never been in trouble, has been paid like a fourth round pick, which is $1 million a year thereabouts. And Zeke almost trying to cut the line in this regard. I think it's totally justifiable on Zeke's end, but would you worry about how the locker room, most notably Dak and Amari, are going to react to Zeke not being there when they are there?
Well, I understand what you're saying, but those contracts are in the works, and his contract was not in the works. So he, and I'm sure he approached him and said, this is something I want to do. They said, you're probably going to have to wait, and he took a stand. And look, that's I get where he's coming from a business perspective. Now, I wonder if he's going to take a step back and say, okay, I was suspended for those games. I did have the other issue this offseason that didn't really go anywhere, but there's been some things along those lines, and it is early. Is he going to take some discount because of those behaviors? And typically, the answer is no to that.
How long do you think this will play out for? Do you think this would bleed into the regular season?
I don't think so. I think the Cowboys understand how important he is. I mean, Amari's great and Dak's great.
He's the focal point of this offense.
Yeah, he is the straw that stirs the drink. They were right on with saying that. So they're going to have to get him in and figure out a way to make this work.
And he's the best player on the team. This is what the players respect in the locker room. Who's the best? All right? You don't think, oh, man, did this guy get in trouble? Oh, did this guy, he get a traffic ticket? Man, we don't care. We don't care. Man, who can play the game of football? Who going to make the Dallas Cowboys better? When you get in that locker room, that's what becomes important. All that, I was drafted in the fourth round. Well, that's your problem. That ain't no one else's problem. There's all kinds of story. You imagine me telling Johnny Randall, hey, Johnny, you were a street free agent. You know something? Hey, buddy, that's tough luck. Man, Johnny Randall was out there getting his. I played with 7 Hall of Famers. You think we didn't have times where they was trying to get their money? You think that they didn't think that they were the best in the business? That's all a part of it. The one thing that people miss, fans, it's all the players against management. It ain't some of the players. And when management starts talking good about the players, the other players are like, okay, they didn't say that about me. Zeke should be concerned. Dak is going to get paid. That's a guarantee. Amari Cooper, because they traded for him, and the impact on Dak, he's going to get paid. That's a guarantee. So now how much of the pie do I have left? Zeke is a fool if he starts playing for the money he's playing for, where he wouldn't get any new money for three seasons. Man, you know, I mean, that's a lifetime in the NFL. We saw Todd Gurley. We saw L. Bell. Look at how their fortunes have changed over the last 3 years. We want Zeke to wait 3 years till he gets paid? That's not going to happen.
Also, look what the Cowboys look like without Ezekiel Elliott. It's not like they've got really depth at that position. Talk about what would happen if he did hold out, where this team could go without him on it.
Well, I think that's the interesting thing about the conversation, because when Amari got there, the offense did get better, mm-hmm. and it helped Dak, and Dak has done some good things. But it all centers around everybody's trying to stop Zeke. And when you're loading up the box, when everything is focused on stopping that one player, it opens up an incredible amount of things for the other guys, mm-hmm. for the tight end, for the wide receivers. When you take him out of that mix and now they can focus on Amari, or they can focus on dealing with Dak exclusively, then it's a much harder road to go for the offense.
I know, Coach, when we had all those effective offenses in Minnesota, and it was generated by the wide receivers. Jake Reed and myself, 1,000-yard seasons, 4 seasons in a row. Then we get Randy Moss. When the quarterback would come to negotiate, they would tell him, it's our wideouts. And our wideouts, Jake got paid, Moss got paid, and I got paid. It was about who was the absolute best. And in Dallas, Ezekiel Elliott is the best, not offensive player, he's the best football player. He's the best. And when that star goes out there, when all those players run out there, Ezekiel Elliott is the best. And that locker room, they know that. They know when he's on the team, we got a better chance. So I don't think that Zeke holding out is going to reflect on the locker room in a negative way.
And maybe most importantly, it's not just that the Cowboys know that. To Coach's point, the opposition knows it. And the opposition, every game they play against Dallas, the first thing in the meetings is, how are we going to slow down 21? And they go from there. And if all of a sudden he's not out there, as we saw for 6 weeks a couple years ago, in the first three games, the Cowboys went 0-3 and scored 7 points per game in that first stretch. Mm-hmm. If it becomes, oh, Zeke's not out there, we can focus on, we can drop an extra man into coverage. We can focus on stopping what is a relatively pedestrian aerial attack.
Same thing they did to Jared Goff.
Yeah, then all of a sudden the offense grinds to a halt when the defense isn't focused on, because he's so good they can focus on stopping him and he still wins a rushing title.
And look, you've got a first-time offensive coordinator. You need to help him out, and helping him out is having an elite running back in the backfield. You've got a head coach who's getting close to the end of his contract.
Yep.
There's a lot of pressure on him to perform as well. So to go into the season without your, like Chris said, the best player on your team, It's a hard thing to do, and he's really got the leverage over the Cowboys at this point.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.